Fred, I'd like to begin by asking you how you got involved personally with human rights work.
I used to live in Latin America, and in the 70s, and I was working as a chemist for a large transnational corporation, and that work took me to quite a number of different countries, but I lived in Colombia, Venezuela, and Mexico. And for the first time in my life, I saw and experienced discrimination, prejudice, particularly against women and children. They always seem to be bottom of the list. And this disturbed me quite a lot. I also saw kids existing on the streets in the most awful condition, and it had an effect on me. I became quite angry about it, and I started to try and understand more about the phenomena of street kids, and undertook sort of voluntary work in my spare time, working with organizations on the ground. So that was my first introduction to human rights work, if you like. I came back to the United Kingdom and continued my work as a businessman in the chemical industry, and volunteered with Amnesty and became a part of the Children's Human Rights Network. And I worked there for a number of years and helped and supported them. Again, using my business background in terms of organization management and fundraising. And about this time, I became aware of the work of Casa Alianza. I saw the documentary, They Shoot Children, Don't They? And it had a dramatic impact on me. The program spoke to me, and the program was about the death of a young child, Nahaman Carmona Lopez, who was kicked to death on the streets of Guatemala by four uniformed policemen. And I got involved in that campaign, and that was my introduction to Casa Alianza.
You mentioned trying to get your head around the phenomenon of street children. How do we make sense of that?
You don't have to travel half a world to see street kids. You can go on the street corners in the UK and see kids suffering. Not necessarily street kids, not necessarily being murdered by the police and authorities, but you can see kids suffering, kids hurting. And, you know, 15 years ago, people were outraged by what was happening to kids in Central America. You know, the murder, the prostitution, the abuse. But in the UK, I find that, you know, people are no longer outraged by what's happening, because some of those issues are in our own communities. As a society, the way we treat our children is absolutely appalling. Answering your question directly, how do we get ahead around the phenomena of street kids? It's something that, until you've personally experienced how these kids not live but survive on the streets, the conditions in which they live, the abuse that they're subjected to, physical abuse, sexual abuse. It really is something that you have to see and experience to understand. Even then, you cannot understand it. You know, the numbers are something which are also very difficult to try and get your head round. You know, the statistics that are still bandied about are the same statistics, the same numbers as when I started working about 15 years ago. 100 million children living on the streets of our world, 40 million of those kids in Latin America. And organizations, including Casa Alianza, are still using those same numbers. And the sad thing is that nobody really knows how many kids are out there. You know, the last statistics were from the World Health Organization and from UNICEF. But we know from our own work in Central America, that these are a guess. Even within the communities where we're working 24/7, we're coming across groups of kids that we didn't know about. The kids tend to hide themselves away. Society doesn't want to see these children, so they hide themselves away. And the numbers are just escalating. You know, there are two frightening trends here. One is the number of kids being thrown onto the streets, very, very sharp escalation. And secondly, the average age of the children coming onto the streets is getting lower and lower and lower. But also, again, the societies in which these kids exist are in denial about their very existence. If you talk to certain governments in Latin America, they'll say, well, we don't have street kids, we don't have that problem. They refer to it as a problem. We never refer to the street child problem. We always refer to it as a phenomena, because these kids have enough negative labels attached to them without us talking them in terms of being a problem. And, you know, I wish I could transport your listeners to some of the streets where our people work, and they could meet these kids, because they are really, really great kids. You know, they're no different from our sons or daughters, our nieces, our nephews. They're kids. They've got the same wants, the same desires, the same dreams, the same hopes, the same aspirations. And nobody has the right to murder and abuse those kids. Nobody.
And what are some of the examples of these stories that you've come across? You must have met some children in very distressing circumstances.
I'll talk about my last encounter, which was about a month ago. And I was working in Mexico City with our street educators. A normal day's work for this team. And the role of the street educator in the Casa Alianza programs is to be out there on the streets providing help and support for the kids. We don't take food or clothing, but we do take educational materials, first aid materials, and we try to encourage the kids to come off the streets to come into the programs. And they're out there with the kids on their turf, on their terms. So the work of the street education team is that they'll go out, they'll do their rounds to known areas where street kids congregate, and they'll work with them. They'll be there, they'll talk to them, they'll find out what problems, what difficulties they have. They'll offer them help, support, educational materials, trying to encourage them to come back into the crisis centre. And this particular day, we were going out to meet a young woman, Aurelia. She would be about 17. And unlike most street kids, she was alone. She had no one. Most street children congregate in groups like surrogate families, and they look after themselves. And there's a lot of love and there's a lot of unity within these groups. But there's also a lot of bad stuff. There's a lot of drugs, a lot of abuse, a lot of prostitution. But Aurelia chose to exist alone. She was born on the streets of Mexico City. She'd lived her whole life on the streets. And she was now pregnant. And she'd been physically and sexually abused on an ongoing basis by passers-by, by other people on the streets. And she chose to hide herself away. She chose to live in an underground water tank. And we went to this area, which was waste ground in the north of Mexico City. And we had to go underground in this festering hellhole. There was running water, there was rubbish, there was needles, there was excreta, it was an absolute living hellhole. It was a place where no one would choose to go, but for her it was a haven, it was safe. And she chose to hide herself away, only coming out occasionally. And this was her home. And so we went to see her and talk to her and counsel her, and we were chatting and tried to encourage her to come into the program. You know, she's 17 years old. She was about 4 or 5 months pregnant and had a severe crack habit. You cannot get more vulnerable than that. And so on this particular day, we were talking to her about, well, you know, come into the program. If you're not comfortable, don't have to stay, but at least get a health check. You know, get a health check. Think of your child. Do you want your child to be born in this situation? Come and get checked out. You know, come and have a shower, rest up, whatever. And over the period we were chatting to her, she said, yeah, okay. And so she went back to the crisis center with one of our volunteers. We had a young lady who was a volunteer from a CASA group in Sweden. So she escorted her back to the project and went in. And we carried on with our work out on the streets. Later on that day, when we went back to the crisis center, I went to see where she was and how she was, how she was getting on. And to my dismay, she'd left. She checked herself out. She'd chosen to have a medical checkup, to have a shower, get some clean clothes, something to eat and sleep. And then she left. A typical example of a street child coming in and out of the projects. It's very difficult for the kids to stay, very difficult to the kids to break the link with the streets. It's also not cool to be in a CASA Alianza program. You know, the peer pressure is such that it's very difficult. It's a hell of a decision for these kids to make. Well, later on that night, as I'd finished work and I was walking back to my hotel, I saw Aurelia on the corner of the outside of the crisis centre, and I went over and chatted to her, and she was smiling and she was beaming and she looked much better just for having a shower. And we started chatting and stuff, and I said, you know, why didn't you stay? You know, why do you choose to be on the streets when you've got everything the other side of that fence? And she looked at me and smiled. She shrugged her shoulders and said, así es. You know, that's the way it is. And to me, it's very, very difficult to understand why a young person would choose to go back to that festering hellhole when they'd got everything that they could possibly need within the CASA Alianza program. Our biggest problem is, how do we reach those kids? How do we make our program more interesting? How do we get these, if you like, institutional street kids out of the streets into the programs? How do we do that? It's a constant challenge. And the problem is not the kids we reach, it's the kids that we don't reach. And there are thousands, thousands of kids out there, you know. And I get as angry as hell, you know, that our program in Mexico City, that night, it had a capacity of 300 and there was about 130 kids in there. Why? Now, that's no reflection on our staff. It just serves as an example of how difficult it is to get the kids off the streets. It's one of the most difficult jobs, but it's also one of the most rewarding jobs, to see a young person change their life around.
So it sounds like you're dealing with some very endemic problems as regards societies in Central America.
You know, poverty is the root cause of why there's a lot of children on the streets in the first place. There's no provision for these kids. You know, the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child states every child should have the right to an adequate standard of living. Well, you can debate that. What is an adequate standard of living? But it's enshrined as one of their rights. The right to health care, the right to education, the right to play, the right to a name and a nationality. And so many kids in Central America do not have access to their very basic rights, despite the fact that all the countries in Central America where we work have signed the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. Ironically, Guatemala was one of the first signatories. They've signed it, all they've got to do is apply it. So we're constantly battling against this. And again, another reason why I choose to work with Casa Alianza is Casa Alianza goes behind the issues. It tackles these issues at grassroots. The program started initially with a methodology of care and rehabilitation. And after 22, 23 years of experience in working in Guatemala, our methodology has changed, and it's changed to prevention and protection. Prevention, stopping the kids coming out on the streets. How? By putting resources into the communities where these kids live and providing, you know, counseling, help and support. Sometimes kids will leave home because they haven't got a pair of shoes to go to school in. And if all it takes is to give these kids a pair of shoes, that's what we do. Because experience tells us once these kids leave their home, leave the communities and hit the streets, it's a downward spiral. And protection. Once the kids are on the streets, we do whatever is necessary to protect and defend their rights. And we will put away the perpetrators, whether they're police, individuals, Supreme Court judges. And we've taken a number of cases against the state of Guatemala for violation of children's rights. And, you know, this is another area that I personally believe very passionately in. You know, the whole human rights agenda has got to change. It's got to change to implementation and action.
You've mentioned denial of government authorities. Have you had any rapport with the police authorities?
Again, it's very difficult. I mean, in Guatemala, and in Guatemala and Honduras, it's a running battle, if you like, because sometimes the Casa Alianza is not sometimes constantly accused of denouncing, of complaining about the authorities, their inaction. By pointing out the abuses. But at the same time, we're trying to work with and encourage them. We do police training in Guatemala. We sit on national commissions. You know, we're trying to encourage and help and support. You know, in Honduras, over the last few years, we've seen this horrendous situation with extrajudicial executions, averaging 50 odd a month, the majority of which are not even investigated. It's also very difficult too, because we have to understand, you know, there's a lack of resources in Honduras. And that is one of the reasons why cases are not investigated. But more importantly, there's a lack of political will. They always use the excuse, well, we're poor, we don't have the resources, we've only got one police car, we've got no computers. But the political will is not there to grasp the nettle. So we continue to lobby and campaign. And we're not making very good progress. The last time I saw, a few months ago, I had a meeting with the Minister for Security for Honduras. And we were pressuring him because the police are his responsibility. And he said, well, you know, all the cases that you talk about are with the Attorney General. We've done our job. Stop hassling me. Go and hassle him. It's very, very difficult to sort of engage in a meaningful way and to have a constructive cooperative working relationship with the police. Very, very difficult. But on the other hand, we've had some amazing help and support from retired police officers in a lot of cases, we've been able to access documents. We've been able to access mortuaries and take photographs of kids. Very often, if a case is investigated, there'll be no proper autopsy report, or it won't be properly done, and yet we know that that young person was tortured. And in one case, we managed to get into a mortuary and take photographic evidence of kids who had their eyes gouged out, their ears and their tongues cut off. And yet in the autopsy report, there was no mention of these signs of torture. That was in the case of the San Bosques y Nicolás. Had we not been able to gather that evidence, our case would not have been as strong. So there are some, you know, there's a lot of bad cops out there, but there's some very good ones who are trying to help us and support us in the way that they can.
And how do people supporting CASA worldwide get involved in ordinary campaigning, if you like?
We have what's called a rapid response network, and if you go into the CASA website, which is www.casa-alianza.org, there's a section in terms of how can I help, and there's a rapid response link, and you just click onto that and supporters will receive information, urgent actions and news directly from the field, almost in real time, and that will be the information on which they can write to their MP, write to their MEP, etc. We also have a mailing list for CASA Alianza UK that people can subscribe to. And there we send out hard copy. Very often we can activate a campaign within hours and emails will start arriving in the mailboxes of presidents, human rights commissioners, before they've even written the report. And so they won't know what's going on. So then they start to pick up the phone and say, hey, what's all this about, you know, this case in so-and-so? And it starts to create awareness top-down. And then, you know, with the traditional letters, then you get a second wave of letters.
And Fred, you've also been very involved with a justice campaign of a different sort in Central America surrounding the death of singer-musician Kirsty MacColl. Tell us a little bit about that.
Kirsty was killed in Cozumel, small island off the coast of Mexico, off Cancun, when she was diving. She was diving with her two sons, and in a protected area where no boats were allowed apart from dive boats, and a high-powered speedboat came along and just mowed straight into them, and she was killed almost instantly. The owner of the boat was a very wealthy Mexican industrialist who is one of the top richest guys, one of the top 10 most wealthiest guys in Mexico. And they were basically out joyriding in a boat where they had no business to be. Basically, what happened, there was a gross miscarriage of justice in that the boat owner basically paid someone off to take the rap, and his boat hand, who was on the boat at the time, took the responsibility for the accident by saying that he was at the controls. The net result was that the deckhand was charged with negligent homicide, fined £61, and ordered to pay £1,400 damages to Kirsty's two sons. And Kirsty lost her life saving her kids. She dived in front of them when this boat came, and she lost her life. And She had a great sense of justice and fair play. She was a great human rights supporter. She cared passionately about justice. And I noticed that the campaign was calling for specialist help, specialist volunteers, because they'd been running for about a year and they hadn't really achieved anything, and they'd racked up enormous bills. My original intent was to look at the campaign and offer some strategic campaigning advice and point them in the right direction. But I've ended up basically running that campaign, working with her mother, and over the last years, closing down the investigation and doing all the legal work with a lawyer in Mexico to open a new case and call for a judicial review.
And personally, what keeps you fired up and motivated in this work?
I think I feel a great sense of anger about injustice and discrimination. It's something that burns me up. And if I can do something about it, I'm driven to do it. You know, if I can use my skills in a positive way to encourage and help and support other people, I'll do it. And sometimes it takes you down a blind alley. You know, the majority of my work has been done as a volunteer. All of the work that we do on the Kirsty campaign is a volunteer. And, you know, if you believe in something, then you should see it through. You know, and I started off working in human rights by thinking, God, you know, I remember sitting in these first meetings at Amnesty thinking, I don't really belong here, you know, what am I doing, you know, I don't really know anything about human rights. But, you know, we've all got skills that we can use in a positive way, whether it's being a businessman, a journalist, a social worker. You know, we've all got skills. We can all express ourselves. We can all lobby. We can all use the luxury of the democracy in which we live. We can use it. And if we don't use it, we don't deserve it. And I've found that if you approach things in the right way, with proper reasoned argument, assuming your facts are correct, people will listen to you. And they will do something about it. And I would encourage anybody, if they feel passionately about an issue, to do something about it. You know, stop moaning about it. You know, whether your issue is the environment, whether it's human rights, whether it's, you know, ban the bomb, whether it's animals or whatever. Whatever your issue is, become vocal. Don't just sit there. You know, do something about it. And sometimes people, I hate to use the word ordinary people, no such thing as ordinary people, but sometimes we don't know what we're capable of until we're challenged. And, you know, if you feel strongly about something, you should do it. You know, many, many times I've thought, God, this is just too much. There's too many cases. I can't, you know, we're not changing things. What the hell are we doing? And the easiest thing in the world is to give up. But what keeps me motivated are the successes. The successes. People telling you, you know, you're not going to change things. You know, Casa Alianza, for example, has set precedents, legal precedents, in terms of human rights law for kids, not just in the areas where we work, but all in Latin America. Took 11 years to bring about that. But, you know, what's 11 years in the fullness of time? What's 11 years in the history of Latin America? And being a part of that, playing a small part of that, is quite something very special.
Fred, thanks very much for talking about your work.